See, the biggest challenge the climate movement faces is to bridge climate science and human justice. And that's embodied, of course, in the concept of climate justice. I think the deadlock debate at the international level and the debate in Australia now, as I'll try and argue in a minute, I think demonstrates the necessity of making that bridge. Climate policy has to both secure emissions reductions on the scale required and do so in a way that is socially just. Why is this? Because unjust climate policy is unpopular, of course, is vulnerable to attacks from sceptics, as we've seen, and will most likely be ineffective because it will be open to capture by the big corporate polluters. So what we need is an equitable climate policy that promotes social justice and reduces emissions, does both things at the same time. The key elements of this that I'll try and get to at the end of this brief talk is firstly, in terms of meeting the immediate need to reduce emissions, of course what we need is a closure of carbon-intensive industries and just transitions. And this, I think, has to focus on the corporate culprits. Secondly, we need to, of course, construct a renewable sector, as we've talked about. And for that to be just, that needs to be funded from direct taxes. That is, taxes on income and profit, not on commodities. So I will then move to the second thing, the role of social movements. There's been a lot of talk already at this summit about the need to... Well, there's been a lot of talk about the formal political process, the politics of the possible, the art of the possible. Now, for social movements, I would submit, what social movements are engaged in is the art of the impossible. Of our role in the political process as part of a social movement is to make the impossible possible. If we gear our proposals and actions to the political context, we will essentially be giving up on that crucial responsibility of social movements, which is, as I said, to make the impossible possible. We have to be several hundred steps ahead of the formal political realm. We need to be setting the agenda, not following it. On the role of the summit, I attended summit 2 years ago and then the summit last year. 2 years ago, we were against the CPRS. Last year, we were very strongly against ETSs in any context, against emissions trading anyway. I think we had a major impact on the debate on the CPRS, and our focus at the time was on the extent to which emissions trading awarded permits to pollute that would create new property rights, that would set in stone a model that would take us backwards. We argued at the time that emissions trading was worse than nothing. And I think we were right. And in fact, as was acknowledged last night by the ACF, we were right. The Southern Cross Alliance was wrong to have backed the CPRS. Now, in 2011, what's on the table? A new ETS with a fixed price, with no international offsets for 3 years. Do we support it? Do we support that now when we opposed it 2 years ago? Is it any different on those key issues of awarding permits to pollute and setting in stone a new property right to pollute? No, of course not. It's no different. A price on carbon, will it cut emissions? I have to say I haven't heard any arguments so far at the summit that it will indeed work. Putting a price on carbon, making polluters pay, in my view, will not necessarily cut emissions. Why? Because it assumes that price is all important. In fact, income may be more important than price. So in a growth economy, polluters pay to pollute and pollute more. This is the lesson of ETSs and carbon taxes around the world. The price incentive simply does not work in a growth economy. Some carbon taxes have reduced emissions. Of course, Denmark is often cited as an example, but not because of the incentives that are established under a carbon tax, not because the price of carbon has been increased by the tax, but by the revenue that has come to the government from that tax, in the Danish case, was invested in renewables. And that's what led to the reduction in emissions in Denmark, as against other contexts. So we can say that the revenue from a carbon tax or a trading scheme can be used to boost renewables. Fair enough. But let's take us back to Australia. Revenue from the carbon price will go to compensation to households, subsidies to polluters, and then renewables, whatever's left, in that order, of course. So I would submit there's not much hope for a boost for renewables from a carbon price. And the additional problem is one that's already been mentioned, is that the carbon price undermines the more direct measures which are already in place, such as the renewable energy target. And I would also mention the fact that under the Queensland flood a number of more direct measures were simply removed to fund the flood recovery. So worse than nothing in that respect. And a price on carbon, is it socially just? No. Indirect taxes are levied on the price of a commodity, not directly on income. Indirect taxes are always socially unjust. They are regressive. The poor pay more as a proportion of their income than the rich. They redistribute income from the poor to the rich in that respect. So that's why we opposed, many of us here, that's why we opposed the GST. Indirect taxes are socially unjust and they are therefore, and this is very important, deeply unpopular. They redistribute income from poor to rich, as I've said. Often we see compensation efforts introduced in order to try to make them more popular, try to argue that the compensation can counteract this redistributive effect. But as we all know, such compensation never keeps pace with the rising cost of living as a result of the tax. So carbon pricing is ineffective, it's unpopular, it's worse than nothing. It undermines what progress has already been made in terms of additional measures, renewable emissions, and takes us backwards fast. What might a progressive carbon policy look like? What non-market measures are available to us? I would add, what non-market tried and tested measures are available to us as against neoliberal market fantasies? I think any debate about a progressive policy needs to begin with the international context and needs to focus on the need for climate debt repayments, trust funds to address adaptation mitigation needs in the global south. That's our climate debt to the world to fund emissions reductions in the south. So I think that's very important to put that up front. And secondly, it's very important for us to argue for localization, and this is a familiar theme, that the need to dismantle a national energy market in particular, scale down and enable direct delinking from the coal cycle and from energy dependence. These are sort of direct regulatory measures. And thirdly, there's a whole range of things that can be done in terms of regulating the 1,000 companies that are responsible for 70% of Australia's emissions. Why not directly impose emissions reductions on those companies? Why not impose sanctions on them if they breach those requirements? Why not establish, say, a 30-year phase-out of emissions to zero? Those kinds of regulations have proved very effective in the past. Why not in this case? And then fourthly, what about the coal and power sector? Why not a full-scale program of decommissioning the sector, a closure of fossil fuel power stations, public investment directed into publicly owned renewables industry that is decentralized, localized? Why not a halt on new mines and, most importantly, a halt on mining for export? Because, as we know, Australian exports ensure that renewables are always on the back foot wherever Australian coal is sold. So in India, for instance, renewables are on the back foot because cheap coal is available from this country. And finally, what about focusing regulations on the expansion of carbon sinks? Why shouldn't we be arguing about a new model of land ownership in Australia, a model of land ownership that expands carbon sinks rather than, as at present, of course, diminishes them? So I think there's a lot that we could be arguing for, a lot of impossible things that we could be arguing for, and I believe should be arguing for in the current debate. And I think now is as good a time as any. Many people have argued that right now what we should be doing is, even if we disagree with the carbon price that's proposed, that we should support it in the view that it's one step along the way to what we really want, that it prefigures more effective measures to reduce emissions. Well, hopefully what I've argued here demonstrates that perhaps it doesn't do that. Perhaps it is worse than nothing. Perhaps it takes us back. And perhaps we need to be arguing that, putting that on the table at this crucial moment.